Sorry for the delay here. It's always an anxious moment to get going to have the meeting. Now, actually, I could possibly give the talk in German, but I'm not that familiar with the German terminology in this field here, so I prefer to talk in English. And I'm going to talk about hearing spatially tailored stereo recordings, as the title says. And I speak about it from the perspective of a loudspeaker designer and the perspective of an audiophile, a listener. I'm basically your audience. You are the tone meisters. You do the recording, and I'm the consumer. And so I try to build for myself, actually, mostly for my own purposes, a loudspeaker that gives me an illusion of being at the concert or getting as much information as possible out of the recording that you are mixing together and that you are making. So that's also the goal for my loudspeaker design, to come up with something that does an optimum job. Now, I'm fascinated by stereo because it is such a simple system, and when properly executed, it is capable of just, to me, amazing presentation of just a signal coming from a left and a right loudspeaker. Like you have seen, here's my living room, there are actually four loudspeakers, and I'm just two different types of loudspeakers. And because when done properly, these two loudspeakers, these two real sources, can set up a phantom auditory scene, something is happening just in my brain, which excludes the loudspeakers as sources themselves and excludes the room. So as you close your eyes, you have the illusion of having in front of you a three-dimensional presentation of what it is that you recorded. Now, in doing so, you become, of course, very aware of the spatial relationships in the recording, the localization of instruments, the depths, the height, the width. And I find that in many recordings, what is being presented is sort of unnatural. There are many subspaces that are put together like a collage in a recording, in a pictorial scene, or there is sort of a diffuseness, a nondescript presentation. And so I ask myself, is this really what you wanted? Maybe that was the intention of the recording, but possibly you never really heard what it was that you recorded. Because you, of course, depend on the loudspeakers to know what it is that you're putting down in these two tracks that eventually get played back. So that, in a way, is a summary of what I'm going to talk about here. And now I will go into more detail of how to get there, to get to this possibility of having just phantom sources. So let me start with binaural, because that is a system here which is really physically correct way of reproducing the signals that we hear, namely the eardrum signals. And that works very well if we wrong button. Where is the pointer? This one. If we record the signal right at the eardrum through a small plastic flexible tube and then play it back over the same system here, reproducing that same signal at the eardrum, and you may recognize that face from the side here. I took it out of a paper. And the point that I want to make is that this kind of system works exceedingly well in reproducing the temporal aspects, the spatial aspects of the original event that was listened to. And it may be in a totally different environment, so the visual impression is that of a scene here, while in the head, the auditory input stimulates a totally different image. Okay, if the person was there, then it's very easy to reproduce the actual scene. But if I would listen to this here, not having been there, I would also reproduce something, probably based on past experience of how these kinds of things sound. So, but there are some issues with this binaural type recording. And it works well, as I said, But it works really only well for one individual, because everything has to be calibrated. You have to equalize the headphones. If that is not the case, and to the degree that this individual equalization is not accurate there, we lose, particularly in the spatial aspects of the reproduction. What happens first is that the distances get foreshortened. In the extreme case, the whole auditory event collapses as an illusion inside the head between the ears. But this is, I think, is not a very practical system. It works fine for research and individuals. We're really interested in loudspeakers, and so let's look at loudspeakers, and let's start out with a single loudspeaker in a room. And that's, in a way, is a misnomer, because you never have a single loudspeaker in a room. You have loudspeaker reflections, which you can model in the case here, like I've shown here, is just mirror images of the loudspeakers. And so you see just a single loudspeaker near room corner. There's a whole number of other loudspeakers due to reflection. Mm-hmm. And this is something that we have to deal with and that we are very familiar with. And acoustically speaking now, we have a direct sound. Oops, I'm always pushing the button here. We have the direct sound coming from the speaker, direct pass, and then the reflected sounds from all these different speakers here. And if you add the rest of the room, other corners, ceiling, back wall, you have more and more of these images, basically infinite number of images, that somehow the brain has to deal with. And so if we ask ourselves what should be the frequency response of this loudspeaker, because that's what I'm interested in as a loudspeaker designer, then you would have to say on axis, flat would be a good choice. That because flat means that from wherever you are in the room, you will have the same spectral information. Off axis, well, what is really off axis here? We always assign an axis to a loudspeaker because typically they are directional. But off axis, you would really want to have the same spectrum at every angle, not necessarily with the same amplitude, but at least spectrally you want to have the same information there. So what I'm talking about here, the ideal loudspeaker, in my opinion, is a loudspeaker that has constant directivity. And what that means, constant directivity, is physically only realizable if the source, the loudspeaker, is acoustically small, meaning it's acoustically small compared to the wavelength that it radiates there. Now, what's the room response? Of course, all these images represent the room response. And the room is, of course, reverberant or anechoic, well, not really. The question is, where should it be? Now, it shouldn't be anechoic. That's very uncomfortable. If it is highly reverberant, that is also uncomfortable because you lose intelligibility and everything gets mushed together. And what should be the reverberation characteristics of the room? I think they should be mostly frequency independent. Because if you roll off all the high frequencies, it's a very muffled type of environment. Again, from our normal hearing, not that comfortable. Now, if we take two loudspeakers, put them in the room, if the loudspeaker reproduces two different signals, say out of this loudspeaker, we hear rap music, out of this one, hear Mozart, we clearly know that there are two sources in the room. We can localize it, we know where they are. But as the signals become the same in these two loudspeakers, and by the way, what I've shown here, different radiation patterns for the loudspeaker, let's assume now we are talking about a loudspeaker, say a dipole here on this side and a dipole on that side. And as the signal in these two loudspeakers become more and more equal, a phenomenon happens, and it's very strong, when we apply mono signals to these two loudspeakers, we have a phantom center. We sit in the middle. That, I think, is a highly unnatural event. I don't think it has ever happened in nature. And I always consider it as an act of desperation that the brain sitting here, you're sitting here in the midst between these loudspeakers, As you move your head a little bit to this side, you hear a loudspeaker here. Move your head a little to that side, you hear this loudspeaker. But when you're right in the center, where should you place the loudspeaker? So out of desperation, we put it right in the center here, as if the source was right in the center. There is some other interesting thing, is how far away should this phantom source be? Well, we know the distance to the loudspeakers. We have localized those right away when we enter the room. And so the distance of this phantom source is probably at least, at minimum, the distance that we have to the loudspeakers. There is an interesting thing here, though, happening, that as we move our head sideways, and if we apply an unnatural signal like pink noise, we hear a comb filtering effect. Very clear, I'm sure you're all aware of that effect there. But if the signal is a familiar one, like voice or music or so, this comb filtering effect is not really that noticeable. The other thing is, as we turn our head sideways, the signals at the ear change greatly, and yet what we perceive, the tonality, it does not change, even though the ear signals change greatly. If you move your head, if you did this in binaural, when you move your head, the whole scene shifts with you. You're not moving relative to the scene. Okay. Now, the stereo effect can be increased, improved there, if we use crosstalk cancellation, also a familiar thing there. And crosstalk cancellation can be done electrically. It works even better the closer you bring the speakers together. That's because then these two signals here are more equal and more easily corrected. It can also be done mechanically, like here you see two loudspeakers really close together in a dividing wall between them, and the person sitting right in front, right on your nose, you have this dividing wall, and the effect is that of having a very wide stereo stage because you move the crosstalk cancellation. This, by the way, is Dan Keel, who wrote a paper about this in the 80s or so. Again, not a very practical system, I think, there, and because we really want to listen to loudspeakers. Here, the head-related transfer function, the point of the slide is it's sort of a messy function and difficult to work with, but you can use an approximation in many cases, which is just using the sound pressure on a point on a sphere, on a rigid sphere, and I will get back to this later. Okay, now, if we want to optimize the phantom sources, there are a number of things that I have found are very important. And that is that you have to have symmetry in your setup. The off-axis frequency response has to be the same as the on-axis response. And let's see, the source, in order to get the off-axis response same as the on-axis, you have a limited number of sources, really, that can do this, either an omnidirectional speaker, dipole, cardioid, but there isn't much else there that you could do, or some mix of these. But the point is they all have to be acoustically small. And if you ask yourself what should be the on-axis frequency response of a loudspeaker arrangement like this, here's an observation that I made recently on a loudspeaker design that I did, a dipole loudspeaker, dipole over the full frequency range. And when I turned it on first, I measured it and equalized it on a free field condition to be flat, and it was too bright when I brought it into the room. That's a common experience. Changing the tweeter level, couldn't get quite there, so I ended up with an equalization that was a first order Schelling filter that seemed to work really well, which brought up the question, should the frequency response of stereo loudspeakers really be flat? Well, what I found here is now that wasn't the optimum solution. And when you think about it, we are trying to generate a phantom source, which is in the center, from generating from two signals that are plus and minus 30 degrees incident to the ears. So when you look at the head-related transfer function of 30 degrees relative to 0 degree incidence, and that's what I have done here, and this is just for the example of a spherical model, a sphere, then you find this kind of relationship here for 45 degree versus 0, 22.5 degree versus 0. And looking at the equalization that we arrived empirically at, you see this curve here, or the inverse, this is actually the inverse, because the high frequency sound pressure at 45 degree is about 3.3 dB higher than at 0 degree. And so the loudspeaker does the opposite, does an inverse correction for this here. So that's an interesting thing. I don't know whether that is a universal thing, but anyways, in my case, it produced a very nice loudspeaker. So just to summarize what we have to do with loudspeakers, the loudspeaker listener setup has to be a triangle, equilateral triangle. That's nothing new there. That's basically what we have been doing all along. But there has to be symmetry of the setup relative to the reflecting surfaces all around. There has to be, the loudspeaker cannot be against the walls, side walls or rear walls or in the corner. It has to be out in the room, and I found at least a meter away from reflecting surfaces is what's necessary. This gives a delay, a minimum delay of about 6 milliseconds for the first reflections to arrive at the ears there. And that appears to be a long enough time gap so that it's a basically a psychoacoustic phenomenon can take place where the listener perceives the loudspeakers and the sound streams coming back from the room, the reverberant and diffuse field, as two different auditory events. And we have this wonderful capability in hearing that we can adjust our acoustic horizons. Like we can intentionally concentrate on what we want to hear. And the room is often not really of interest that much. Okay, we're interested in a conversation or so. Or to give you an example, you may enter a room and you hear a ticking clock there, and it ticks quite loud. After a while, you don't hear that clock anymore. It has moved beyond your acoustic horizon. It's no longer of interest here. So in a proper setup, what can be done and what is, I think, so amazing is that you can actually remove the room from your perception, and you can remove the loudspeakers as direct sources from your perception. You can hide them, etc. And also interesting is that in the room you want a dead end on this side and sort of a live or diffuse end on this end, which is, I think, different from what is practiced in some recording studios, according to what I have.
Right.
And now let's go to the recording side of things. Now, you're the experts here. I don't tell you anything new. We pen phantom sources between left and right loudspeakers by either intensity or by timing differences. But there now is where I think the art of recording really starts there, because how do you place these sources between the loudspeakers and at the same time also capture the fact that every source exists in a spatial context? In other words, in natural hearing, we always hear also a space in which the sound occurs there. And you can do it like with a simple technique, the ORTF, two closely spaced microphones, say at some distance from an orchestra here. But typically you pick up too much of the hall, of the reverberation, because these microphones hear all around the sound from the back and from top and at the sides, is not all mapped between the loudspeakers. But a good portion of that is mapped into either the left loudspeaker or the right loudspeaker as monaural signals there. And then when you hear it back on listening, you cannot get rid of them. If you do a simple experiment, like you listen to a recording in your living room and record, say, with microphones near your ears, and play it back, you all of a sudden, on playing back, you hear your room very strongly in the recording. Your mind can no longer deconvolve it sort of from what you heard when you just listen to the CD directly through the loudspeaker. But recordings are often done with the microphones, with many microphones over the orchestra. We were in the Gewandhaus last night, had a wonderful concert, and counted about how many?
22.
22 microphones hanging down. No, I don't know how many of those are used. But it's now then, I think it's a really artistic endeavor to combine the outputs on these various microphones in a way that gives a plausible and sensible presentation of what I, as a listener in the audience, would have heard from a totally different perspective. You have a problem here, it's like Davis Symphony Hall, where I come from, San Francisco. Just for scaling purposes, here's my living room. I sit, say, at an angle of 60 degrees from it, and here would be the phantom source of an orchestra. If you were at 60 degree angle from this performance, you'd start my deep into the audience, and recording from here picks up a lot of hall there, and certainly wouldn't sound quite right. I can sit in my living room at this much larger distance and still get a good presentation, but if you're way back here in Symphony Hall under the balconies, it's quite a different experience there. It's like a good home stereo system, very good home stereo system, but you lose completely the sense of space and openness that you have sitting closer on up. So these are issues that you as tone meisters, I assume, are dealing with and maybe struggling with, or maybe not. But I'm sure you're aware of all this. I don't tell you anything. I'm just pointing out that as a listener, I can appreciate what it is that you're doing. And just to summarize, I want to say that if you have an appropriate radiation pattern in the setup of your loudspeakers, then it is possible to create phantom sources and to experience stereo optimal in a room. Stereo, to me, in summary, is a wonderful illusion engine. And so I love to go to the orchestra, to the symphony hall, but I also love to listen at home. And even though it's a scaled down, smaller version of what I hear in the symphony hall, it can be a very satisfying experience. And I have many examples of recordings that do a similar job. So that's basically what I have to say. There is, after this today and tomorrow, in room 2290, a demo. I have a pair of small omnidirectional loudspeakers, two-way loudspeakers, that I have set up that can give you some idea of, I think, what is possible, what you can do with just a simple stereo system there. So that's all I have to say. Thank you for your attention. And I hope to see some of you back in the demo room sometime, either today or tomorrow, so we can talk some more and hear what is being done. Thank you.
Illustrated and explained.
Now you need to hear it.
Then thank you again.
See what I'm telling you.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Thank you.